Eku iluna, all rise. Kinohone ka aha ho okolo kolo ho opi iku e, o kaluna ka na vai hanohano o Lisa M. Ginoza, ame kaluna ka na vai hanohano o P.K. Hiraoka, ame kaluna ka na vai hanohano o Karen T. Nakasone, e ho o malune. The Intermediate Court of Appeals is now in session. The Honorable Lisa M. Ginoza, Keith K. Hiraoka, and Karen T. Nakasone presiding. Enoho Ilalo, please be seated. Calling case number CAAP-17-0000072. Aaron Arbels et al., plaintiffs, appellants, the Merit Appeals Board et al., defendants, appellees, Marjorie Bronster and Robert Hatch for plaintiffs, appellants, and Mark Disher for defendants, appellees. Argument on the merits.
Good morning, counsel. May I have your appearances, please?
Good morning, Your Honor. Marjorie Bronster and Robert Hatch, on behalf of the appellant battalion chiefs, and present today with us in the courtroom are Chief Hayashida and Chief Komatsu.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Deputy Corporation Counsel Mark Disher on behalf of the County Defendants Appellees.
Good morning. A few administrative matters before we start. As you know, we have had a few technical issues with our audio. Seems to be working well at this moment, so I'm happy about that. As I think you were advised, we are okay with you removing your masks while you argue. Please keep them on otherwise. And the judges will keep our masks on unless you advise us that you're having difficulty hearing us, and at which point we will remove our masks while speaking. And also make sure that you speak into the microphone as we are live streaming. And so that will help with the audio pickup for the live stream as well as the cameras, which are doing the live stream. Do we have any questions about the housekeeping matters? Okay. And counsel will argue from your counsel table, right? Okay, let's begin. Thank you.
Thank you. And let me say how happy I am to actually be here in person after these very difficult couple of years. And I would like to reserve 10 minutes of my time.
Thank you, counsel.
The question before us today is whether the county can ignore the mandate that was set forth by the legislature when it amended Chapter 89C in 2005. It is a statute that applies to all employers, government employers throughout the state. And for the most part, it has been complied with by firefighter units across the state. According to the act that was passed in 2005, there was a mechanism put in to ensure that adjustments would be made for excluded managerial employees that required that the compensation and benefit packages given to such excluded employees would be at least equal to the compensation and benefits paid to the employees under the collective bargaining agreement who were subordinate. So what were they trying to accomplish? What they were trying to accomplish was that the legislature sought to have people who were elevated beyond the collective bargaining unit to become excluded managerial to make sure that they weren't taking a pay cut. And while it was discretionary prior to 2005, in 2005, the legislature decided to make it mandatory. They were trying to solve an existing problem. And when they did so, 89C broadly defined what adjustments had to be made. 89C 1.5 defined adjustments to include change in wages, hours, benefits, and other term and conditions of employment. Thus, it was an extraordinarily broad definition. Now, we'll hear in a few moments the fact that the county would like you to use the definition of adjustment in the collective bargaining agreement rather than the one in the statute, because they don't want to be bound by what the legislature said was required. And when you apply the clear language of 89C3, we believe that it requires the county, it required the county to make adjustments to assure that the battalion chiefs were paid at least as much as the employees who were their subordinates. Again, the MAB and the county say, look at the collective bargaining agreement. Look at chapter 76. Take other things into consideration. But 89C3 addresses that too and says you are not to do that because 89C3 takes precedence. If you take a look at 89C6, it says adjustments made in accordance with this chapter shall take precedence over all contrary local ordinances, executive orders, legislation, rules adopted by the state, the counties, any agency, including the Merit Appeals Board. So if there were any question as to whether or not you should be incorporating other things by reference, which we don't think that the law allows, 89C makes it clear that that's not to happen here. So what is the county arguing? Well, they seem to have three primary arguments that we disagree with. Number one, they believe that the standard should not be de novo. However, we believe that they are applying the wrong standard. There are no issues of fact in this case. We essentially presented the facts and they were essentially not disputed. So all of the facts were accepted. So we are not dealing with questions of fact. So,
counsel, on that point, I just wanted to be clear. I mean, I don't see it disputed anywhere, but all of the battalion chiefs who are appellants, well, I guess it would be all of the battalion chiefs are, in fact, excluded civil service.
Yes.
Okay, so there's no question about that.
That's correct, Your Honor. At this point, most of them have now retired, but that doesn't change the fact that they were affected while they were employed, and they were even affected in their retirement. So, and the standard says that you have to look to see whether there should be any deference given to the MAB. And in the case cited by the county, in the Paul's Electrical case, it makes it clear that what you have to do when you're determining whether or not the administrative agency properly applied the law, you look to see if the legislature delegated authority to that entity to make determinations as to the law. And there was no such delegation. Accordingly, under the Paul's Electrical case, if the statute does not grant an agency discretion with which to interpret a statute, then the agency's legal conclusions are reviewed de novo. And if there were any doubt, we believe that 89C6 puts that to rest, where it says the MAB is not given authority to change and the precedence, the language of 89C takes precedence. The second argument that the county has presented, which we believe is incorrect, is that they state that the adjustment that is required by the legislature in 89C should exclude the 8.126 differential. And that is a differential that they claim should be ignored because it relates to hazard pay and the battalion chiefs were not entitled to it.
Counsel, I do have a question specifically on this issue, which
yes,
is under 89C-3B2, which is the section that talks about at least equal,
yes,
to the compensation and benefit packages of subordinates. Do the battalion chiefs, or did they have the opportunity to qualify for the hazardous duty pay? In other words, were they allowed to train and or become certified like other firefighters?
Your Honor, I think that's an incredibly good question. And I think that the county has pretty much glossed over that. In fact, all of the battalion chiefs have been trained for hazardous duty.
Is that in what, the findings anywhere?
Yes.
Okay. Can you point that out?
And I believe that it is not disputed. What they're saying is that the battalion chiefs are not in a unit, but they do not dispute the fact that they have been trained, and I will find it in a moment.
Yeah, I saw.
Didn't, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Didn't Mr. Hayashida testify to that?
In his Pardon?
Didn't Mr. Hayashida or Chief Hayashida testify to that?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. He did, and I believe every one of the battalion chiefs who were asked did say that they were trained in hazardous duty. And in fact, it's a requirement to be a battalion chief.
Thank you.
Mr. Hatch has just helped me here. On our brief on page 7, we cited to the fact that operational battalion chiefs are required to obtain specialty training in hazmat and rescue, like those firefighters assigned to the specialty stations. And we cited to the transcript, and they're responsible for commanding the specialty operations within their battalion. So they actually oversee these people as well.
Okay, so it's in a transcript. It's not necessarily a finding by the board or by the circuit court.
I will check during the recess, but I will. I think that's correct.
And we'll hear from counsel for the county if that is disputed.
And I note that when you take a look at the brief, the county does not dispute that. They're focusing on the unit.
Right, because there is a finding that none of the battalion chiefs were ever assigned to one of those specialty units, right?
That's correct, okay. But they did oversee them and they were required to have the basic training.
Okay.
And I think that takes us into the analysis that I wanted to touch on next, which is that if you look at the collective bargaining agreement, the 8.126% differential is really not a differential. It is an addition to the base pay. And whether you call it a differential or an adjustment to the base pay, it is something that is included within the definition of adjustment in 89C 1.5, because it is the amount. But taking a look at the hazardous duty section, there are really two different types of hazardous duty adjustments. One is a 15% adjustment that is temporary, that is given to people who end up being in the hot zone. That is not the adjustment that we're talking about. It is part of section 44 of the collective bargaining agreement, and it is hazardous duty. If you look at D of the collective bargaining agreement, section 44, it says, notwithstanding the temporary adjustment, employees who are assigned to units were designated for search and rescue and require them to be trained, receive 8.126% of the employee's regular salary in addition to the base pay. And so this base, this 8.126 adjustment applies across the board. Every single paycheck, regardless of whether or not they are actually in the hot zone, it applies to their overtime and it applies to their retirement. It is not only for when they, so to speak, jump in the water to save somebody. And there is absolutely nothing within 89C that warrants excluding that from the adjustments. The third thing that we believe that the county gets wrong is the fact that the inversions that were established at the MAB, the circumstances under which captains were making more than the battalion chiefs, they simply want you to ignore. And they basically suggest that 89C has an exception for people who have actually worked longer than the battalion chiefs, that there is somehow some longevity exception written into the statute. But it is not up to the county to change the legislative mandate. It is not up to the MAB to do so either. But the manner in which they argue it is they say that the reference to Chapter 76 in 89C3B3 somehow suggests that you look at longevity and it trumps all. But again, 89C6 says other laws don't trump this, that this takes precedence. And nowhere in Chapter 76 does it say that longevity would trump promotion to an excluded managerial. And even though they argue it in their brief, they don't cite anything for this proposition either.
Now, on that issue, I mean, I don't know that either side really addresses authority for the years of service being part of the merit principle. I mean, that's really where it comes from, right? The merit principle in Chapter 76, which is referenced in Chapter 89C. So, I mean, the way that the board, as well as I think the circuit court, looked at that in coming to their decisions was that the merit principle encompassed years of service. But I guess that's, I'll ask you, because I certainly intend to ask Mr. Disher, what authority is there with regards to years of service, one way or the other, being or not being part of the merit principle?
Well, we don't believe it's part of Chapter 76. We do recognize that years of service do end up resulting in more pay. But Chapter 76, if you look at it, talks about merit in general. They want the best and most qualified people to be elevated and to be compensated. We believe that that's what 89C does for the battalion chiefs. Because without it, you end up having people who don't want to be promoted anymore. They would rather take the captain's job, potentially making more than the battalion chiefs who are supervising them.
When the statute, the 89C3 statute, talks about consistent with merit principle, how do we interpret that?
Well, basically, the merit principles are what warrant having the best people elevated. So you want to make sure that it is the best people who are elevated, who are qualified. You don't want that the county to ignore the standards, the training, the testing. You don't want somebody to get elevated because of nepotism. All of those things would be against Chapter 76. So consistent with Chapter 76, you take a look at who is ready, willing, and able, capable, competent to keep the community safe, to be elevated to those positions. You don't want people who are simply there to get a high three at the end of their career necessarily. You want people who are going to take the step up. And particularly on the Big Island, where the job is so darn hard, they've got such huge territory. They've got so many natural disasters that they have to deal with the volcanoes, with the hurricanes. And they even have the EMS under their watch, with the other state, with the other counties don't have. So it is a huge job to take on. And unfortunately, with the system being the way it is, it disincentivizes the best and the brightest from stepping forward and taking on the job. Because you shouldn't have to take a pay cut when you get a promotion. And that's what 89C3 is all about.
So, Ms. Bronson, the specific COLs that you folks challenged in your opening brief, the pay inversions, it's only for two captains or two battalion chiefs. There were two instances of the pay inversion.
I believe there were four, but it is on exhibit WWW. In the record at docket number 36 and starting at page 101. If you look at it's 101 through 104, and every one of the red entries shows pay inversions. But the system that the county has set up is actually the real problem. We have firefighters in all of the counties, and the state has firefighters as well. And so why is it that only the Big Island, Hawaii County, has this problem? If there are two documents that I would ask you to pay attention to that I think help explain it very clearly. The first one is the comparison chart of the counties. It is a portion of exhibit A26. It is found at document number 24, page 207. And in it, it shows that the city and county of Honolulu, Maui, Kauai, and the state all have battalion chiefs at the EM05 level. Only the county of Hawaii has them at the EM03 level. And the EM05 level is equivalent to an SR28. But the captains, the battalion chiefs on the Big Island are only at an EM3, which is the equivalent of an SR26. So if you look at the collective bargaining agreement, which is Jeff's document number 24, page 977, you will see that captains throughout the state are SR25s. The Big Island BCs are SR26s. The hazmat and rescue captains on the Big Island or throughout the state are SR27s. So their system actually inevitably leads to the BCs getting less than those they supervise. And the BCs in the other counties are EM5s, which was the equivalent to SR28. And so it is the system that they have set up that puts them into this position. And we believe that that is what 89C3 was intended to prevent, and the case, therefore, should be reversed and remanded. Thank you. I would like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Disher.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. First, I want to address the hazardous duty differential. It is, I believe, goes to the heart of the appellant's argument as their own expert witness, their accountant, factored in these differentials as part of their hourly pay to show that certain captains would be making more than the battalion chiefs on the Big Island. That is actually goes to the heart of the both factual and legal dispute, is whether or not these differentials are part of their base pay, basically. Clearly these differential pays, as noted in subsection D of the on the collective bargaining agreement, in section 44, it states that shall be paid a hazardous duty assignment differential of 8.126% of employees' regular salary in addition to base pay and applicable differentials. It is literally spelled out as a differential. Differential pays are outlined in the collective bargaining agreement under section 32A. If you look at docket 22 PDF pages 297, 298, they address them. Every type of differential noted indicates that shall not be considered part of an employee's basic rate of pay. It is in addition to, it is not, it's like comparing apples and oranges. The appellant's argument regarding the hazardous duty differentials as a basically effectively a two-step promotion is also incorrect. The collective bargaining agreement does define what step movements are. A step movement is an increase in employees' basic rate of pay, as these differentials are not an increase to the basic rate of pay. They're not even a step movement. It is in addition to. So when we're looking at the compensation for their base pay, that remains the same.
Well, counsel, can I just, a couple of questions come from what you just argued. So when I look at section 44 B, it says compensation for temporary hazardous duty shall be in addition to base pay, but it starts with the word compensation. And in the statute that we're focusing on, I guess the primary statute that we're focusing on, 89C-3B2, it talks about at least equal to the compensation and benefit packages. And so that's part of the analysis, I think, which is how, you know, I see a lot of that reference to base pay in, I think, in the board's decision and probably the circuit court's decision as well. But the statute speaks to compensation and benefits package. So how do you address that?
As such, under the 44, it's clear that especially the temporary pay, the 15% that was mentioned by appellant Sista in their arguments, these are temporary. They're not making the argument that if there was a non-specialty captain that happened to work a lot of dangerous jobs and were in the hot zone and received 15% and for say an extended period of time that could have made more than a battalion chief, we're not here for that argument. They're not asking us to hear that argument.
It's really D.
And under D, and then under D as well, that these are actually kind of goes back to the merit principle in a way, because here you have other firefighters, not just captains. You have equipment operators, whatnot, attached to these special units. They already have their designated individuals, the search and rescue, the hazmat, that are at the SR-19 level. They're doing hard work. I mean, they're like the special forces, the fire department. They're literally in the land, sea, and air. Or facing dangerous conditions such as hazmat conditions, scuba divers as well. These are all dangerous jobs not required by regular firefighters, which is already a dangerous job as it is. And here these particular firefighters work harder, train harder, and are expected to put their lives on the line. So they are in these special units and they get paid more.
So go ahead.
But they also are part of a larger unit, including a captain that oversees and runs these units. So actually pursuant to the merit principle under 76-1, subsection 5, equal pay for equal work would really apply in these situations as well for these individuals, because they also have to have the certifications. They also have to have the training to be part of these units.
Okay, well, that leads me to the question that I asked Ms. Bronster earlier, which is, are the battalion chiefs, were they allowed or were they able to have that training and certification, which similar to which is required for being in one of these specialty fire units? And I understand there are two specialty fire stations for each battalion, right?
Right, yeah, the okay. Hazmat and the search and rescue.
Right, okay, so that's the end of my question, but are they, the battalion chiefs, are they entitled to or allowed to seek those specialty training and certifications?
Yes, they're allowed to seek those specialty trainings. Actually, it makes sense for them to seek these right. trainings because they need to understand what the various units under their supervision are capable of. And especially a larger scale incident.
They command those, I mean, they are the commanders, they right, for those units?
For the day-to-day operations and supervision and direct supervisions at the captain's level. And that is where the ongoing training happens. That's where the use a military phrase, boots on the ground. They are the ones that are in the hot zone.
But ultimately, the battalion chief has supervision over those
yes.
specialty units.
And it makes sense that they have the training because they need to know the capabilities of the units under them. But there's nothing requiring them to jump on a helicopter, jump on a boat, don a wetsuit, don a hazmat suit.
Let me clarify, too. I think Ms. Bronster said that the battalion chiefs are required, in fact, to have these trainings. Is that correct?
I cannot answer that, but that, like I said, it would make sense based on the battalion chief and assistant chief, as well as the chief of police. We need to be able to understand the capabilities of the various units within the department to be more effective and more of a command and control than like the direct going into the hot zone.
So I guess I'll ask it this way. Is there anything in the record that you can point to suggest that the battalion chiefs are not trained in this way?
I cannot say that they're not trained. I do, in reference to your question earlier, it was a finding of fact with the Merit Appeals Board that none of the battalion chiefs, I believe it is under paragraph 108 of the indicated during the period of January 1st, 2005 to January 15, 2015, no battalion chief has ever been assigned to any of the Hawaii County Fire Department's two hazmat and two rescue stations. And they referenced
Mr. Disher. Can a battalion chief be assigned to a specialty station? I mean, aren't they overseeing them?
Overseeing, yes, but my understanding that was also referenced into even through their career, they were not assigned to, at one point, to one of these stations as well. That's at least my understanding. I may be misremembering it. And as such, and going back to it, so the what basically is being asked by the appellants is for this court to effectively reprice them. They just asked you for it. They want to go from an EM3 to an EM5. Now that is actually affecting their base pay. That would be a two-step movement. That would, whereas these differentials are not part of the base pay. They're not considered a step movement under the collective bargaining agreement.
Right, but we have to apply the statute, and the statute uses the term compensation packages. So why would the differential not be subsumed within that broader statutory language of packages, compensation packages?
As this is basically, again, it goes back to the merit principle in many respects, is we are, you know, paying these firefighters, these specialty firefighters that are doing more work than the average and more, what is more required than the average firefighter. And they are being compensated for that. Yes. There's more arguably an incentive pay, which also falls under 76-13, where you have incentives to to employees to make sure that they are will stay in these units. These are already dangerous units. We are asking them to put their lives on the line above and beyond even the average firefighter, and they need to be compensated. We need the best trained and highest qualified individuals to fill these roles and keep them in these roles. And there was a lot of talk about, some captains will just not want to advance to battalion chief, but that's an assumption that is based on whether or not they'll make more or less money. There's many reasons why a captain may not want to go up the ranks. Maybe they don't want an administrative job. Maybe they don't want that kind of responsibility. Maybe they like being closer to the men and women under their command. There's too many unknowns, and to assume that that is the reason why a captain will pass up a promotion is also, it's an assumption, basically. And so there was a lot of talk about Chapter 89C, but this doesn't address what isn't being addressed is how a merit principle is effectively ingrained in that chapter. I mean, it directs you right to it. It directs in formulating recommendations to the appropriate authority, the respective director shall ensure and propose adjustments are consistent with Chapter 76. Every adjustment, every change needs to have a consideration of the merit principle. And as I stated under at least two different sections, and the merit principle apply to both the questions, the differential question as well as the longevity question. As to the longevity question, the years of service, that my understanding in reading the merit principle would be under the subsection 3, incentives for competent employees. Incentives for competent employees within the service, whether financial or promotional opportunities and other performance-based group and individual awards, and encourage continuous improvement to achieve superior performance. So we want to reward our county employees, not just firefighters, all county employees that stay with the county and do their job and do it well. It's not just at the end of the day, here's your certificate for 20 years of service. No, it's more than that. They get paid more the longer they stay. That is part of the incentives, which includes financial incentives as well.
So I want to just make sure I understand this. So you're pointing to Chapter 76-1, subsection 3, and specifically the language there about encouraging continuous improvement to achieve superior performance. That the continuous improvement, is that what you're saying, is kind of co-equal to years of service?
I would say not just that language, the entire language of subsection 3. I mean, you put it but all
subsection
together.
Three, yes, in particular.
All together. Taking that is where we reward our service to our county employees, and not just firefighters. And we want to encourage them to stay, especially in this day and age where it's a lot of people are moving around from jobs to jobs. We want people to stay stay in their positions, move on, move up, and provide a service.
Well, you want them to move up. So fire captains going to pursue battalion chief positions.
We want them to move up. And also, I mean, as I say, not everyone is cut out for maybe a more administrative job. Maybe they just don't want it, and that's fine. But if they're doing good work where they're at, I say we still encourage that. Is not every firefighter retires as an assistant chief. Not every firefighter retires as a battalion chief. Not every firefighter retires as a captain. But we want to encourage them, of course, over time to be better at their job, regardless of what role they have. But realistically, it's not going to be for everyone.
Do you have any case law at all that addresses years of service as being part of merit principle?
No, I do not.
Okay. I mean, we obviously looked hard at your brief. Okay. Anything else that you would point to in Chapter 76 or otherwise that suggests or supports the argument that years of service is part of the merit principle?
As noted by even retired Judge Hara, this is ingrained in government service. It is the increase in pay over time. The steps. This is not uncommon in not just county, state, federal as well. And it also takes an element of out that is also a concern under the merit principle, is that it is blind in many respects, in that it does not leave the promotions or the pay raises in the hands of, say, lower level managers, where there might be risk of, say, discrimination or being passed over or other. It is there for each member.
So, you know, part of this definition of merit principle in section 76-1 talks about, this is on the top part, fitness and ability for public employment. Retention of employees based on their demonstrated appropriate conduct and productive performance. And I think about, you know, when I was reading some of the materials, it talked about how some of these battalion chiefs got promoted early in their careers. I mean, I there's no explanation as to why or what those situations are, but you would infer that they are good employees identified for promotion, right? Battalion chiefs. So how does that play into, you know, the years of service issue being kind of like kind of elevated by perhaps the board and the circuit court above these other merit principles?
Well, as noted, even where the inversions were taking place, the only times that we had the inversions was when there was captains with more years of service. And then that would be another concern. It's like, how would we peg the starting pay of every battalion chief depending on what the highest captain happens to be making based on largely, likely, their years of service? That would be something that would change over time with retirements and whatnot. So based on the appellant's argument, it would be okay for the county to fluctuate the starting pay of battalion chiefs based on whatever happens to be the most senior battalion chief, to say that's pushing 30 years and it's not quite retired yet, but that's the highest paying one we have. So that's where we're going to put the battalion chief. He retires.
You mean the 30-year captain?
Yeah, as a captain. Right. I mean, yeah. Sorry. Yes, 30-year captain. And then he or she retires, and then now we have a lower highest paid captain that we could peg the starting battalion chief's pay on that, and it would still be in line with 89C. So it's where, you know, based on the argument of the appellants, that would be fine. Whereas the I wouldn't say it's arbitrary, but basically the blind policy of providing years of service for and steps for our employees is. It's not just arbitrary, it's not just blind, it's fair, in that every employee would know what to expect because that's what they get for their years of service. And it's not dependent on other factors such as retirements or whatnot. And there is talk about the promotions of some of the younger battalion chiefs. You know, they were ambitious, and yes, they rose higher and they received their pay raises when they came up. They just happened to have less years of service. That is not unusual in large organizations, whether if it's like a paramilitary organization like the fire department or even in the military. I mean, they all have their pay scales as well that depending on years of service go up over time. One problem is the EMCP that was chosen by the battalion chiefs is that they opted for that version so that they can get more monthly pay. And however, it didn't go to years of service and went to service as their position as a battalion chief is how their steps went up over time. If anything, the avenue that could be considered by battalion chiefs, not just in Big Island, but statewide, is if there's a concern about repricing, which is what is being asked of the appellants, that can be raised, or again, revisit whether or not the EMCP is appropriate for them. If they want to go back to the other options that included years of service, but it had lower they didn't take home as much money right away, is basically. And that's probably what the highlight of, or the appeal of the EMCP was at the time, that it was adopted.
Let me ask you this, is in terms of years of service, is the merit principle, and specifically the reference to chapter 76 in the chapter 89C provisions that we've been looking at, is that the only basis, the merit principle, is that the only basis upon which the county argues that years of service should be excluded from the compensation package analysis?
Basically, but if you look at comparable years of service, so if you had a, and that's what was done by Judge Hara, is basically, yes, he identified two battalion chiefs who were making less, but it was because they had less years of service themselves compared to the captains that they're being compared to. If you were to compare the two individuals based on their base pay, based on their years of service, you would see that there would not have been an inversion. It's, yes, they're still rewarded by getting their promotion. They're still got a pay raise for advancing to battalion chiefs early in their career. And that was rewarded. They did get their pay raise, comparable to a captain that would have, with the same amount of years that they would have had. And also there was a lot of talk in the briefs, though not really mentioned here, is I believe she can distinguish the RCRO case in that that was a program regarding rank for rank. That argument doesn't really apply in this situation, in that in that case, the city and county Honolulu battalion chiefs were basically excluded from the program unless they took a pay cut, effectively denying the battalion chiefs of the opportunity to participate in that rank for rank program. Another distinguishing matter about that case is that the rank for rank, I mean, that applied to not just the specialty units that we're talking about. These are, it applied to the fire department as a whole, and to deny them that opportunity. I mean, it's still voluntary. It didn't have to take it. And that's, again, another issue is that the rank for rank is not a set number. It depends on leaves of other battalion chiefs in this case, or whether or not those positions need to be filled and whatnot. So there is no definitive number, so it can't be considered as part of a base pay either in this kind of situation. Whereas the county's argument is that when looking at the base pay, differentials are not included. And it's pretty clear in the intent of the collective bargaining agreement that differentials are not included in base pay. The hazmat base pay or hazardous duty base pays or differentials are not included in base pay. They are arguably more incentive pay that fall in line with chapter 76 regarding merit principle. And to then elevate the battalion chiefs, not necessarily elevate, but to give them effectively a repricing through this mechanism instead of through another more appropriate mechanism, I believe would be inappropriate. And for that, the county, position is that we should affirm the decision of the circuit court.
I do have one other question for you. I know you're very close to summing up, but you know, we talked about the step movements, right? Which is basically tied to years of service, essentially, right? That's correct. Okay, so the step movements, is that set forth in the CBA here, or is that specifically within the CBA?
CBA under section 32A, subsection O, defines step movement. Okay. I believe you can find it at docket 22, PDF page 300. Step movement means any increase of an employer's basic rate of pay to the next higher step within the pay range, which may be granted as provided in section 32 wages. So it is specific to the basic rate of pay, which is what been the county's argument from the beginning. We've only been comparing basic rates of pay for purposes of complying with Chapter 89C, which includes comparison of years of service, showing that if battalion chief happened to have the same years of service as a captain, he would be making more.
Mr. Disher, why do you think Section 89C3B2 uses the term compensation and benefits package rather than the term basic rate of pay?
Well, compensation and benefit packages are—it's a bit vague and broad terms that are used in the statute. Benefit packages, obviously, benefits could include opportunities for overtime, such as rank for rank, or even medical, dental. These are all encompassed in the benefits package. Compensation—it doesn't, yes, say basic rate of pay or base pay as. I cannot say why it would actually include that language. It would just be a very broad term of compensation, but what are we compensating? And also it has to be consistent with Chapter 76, which is the next subsection under this chapter, which includes equal pay for equal work, as well as incentive for employees that are basically doing more or working harder. So, and actually to come back under the merit principle, we talked about years of service. I mean, even in the paragraph of under 76-1 includes, it is also the purpose of this chapter to build a career service in government. So we want our career employees to stay in government. And one way to do that is ensure that they are incentivized with regular increases over time.
I guess, really what I am asking is, why would the hazardous assignment differential not be considered part of a hazmat captain's compensation package?
Well, it's as mentioned, and also through the Merit Appeals Board and Judge Hara indicated, is that these are in addition to the basic pay. We also are not talking about overtime. It is possible for a subordinate to have so much overtime that he makes more than his superior, but we're not talking about that either as part of this discussion. So this differential was never, all differentials were not considered as part of your basic rate of pay.
That's why we go back to my first question, is why did the statute say compensation package instead of basic rate of pay?
As the package itself is not identified. So the package would have been, you are a captain, this is your basic pay. Now, if you are through your own efforts, get yourself qualified and certified and assigned to a special unit, I would argue that that is not part of the job description of his captain. You are doing something more above and beyond. And it's not part of the compensation package for a typical captain in the fire department. So that it's special. It's like, as I mentioned, they're like, these units are like the special forces of the fire department, and they have more training involved. There's more danger involved, and there is more incentive for in line with the merit principle to ensure that we keep those individuals in those positions. That are doing well and have that training and have those capabilities because they can save lives. I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. Sponsor.
Thank you. As the county has already argued, their primary argument for excluding a differential is based on the language of the collective bargaining agreement and not based on the statute. So They said that the differential payment is defined in section 32A. Differentials in the collective bargaining agreement are not part of pay, but that's not what is required here. What's required here is to look at 89C3. And 89C3 is written very broadly to point out that it is the compensation and benefits package of the battalion chiefs or the excluded managerials that must be at least equal to the compensation and benefits package that the subordinates get under the CBA. And it is that package that you have to look at. And 89C-1.5 says what the county or the employer must do is make adjustments, not just to base pay, but to a change in wages, hours, benefits, or other terms and conditions of employment. So it is very broad. And that's what the legislature was trying to accomplish. And even in the Arciero case, which dealt with one of the benefits, not the compensation, the court there looked at what was the intent of the legislature. The intent of the legislature was to assure that there would be a mandatory, not discretionary, adjustment done by each county. And so when in 2005, the legislature looked at what the counties had done previously, they said, wait a second, we don't like this discretion, this loose situation that ends up with subordinates getting paid more than their supervisors. What Judge Hara did was he added exceptions into the language of 89C. What he said was you have to get a compensation and benefit package that's at least equal to those you supervise, unless those you supervise have more years of service. And that is nowhere in 89C3. It is nowhere in Chapter 76. And we believe that it is simply wrong. And we don't believe that you need to give that any weight.
On that issue of the years of service, Mr. Disher points out a difficulty for the county in terms of an ever-changing landscape of years of service by captains at any given time. As you have retirements, you have a 30-year captain who retires and changes perhaps the average, I'm not sure. So what my question to you is, considering the language of 89C-3B2 and the compensation and benefit packages and making them equal with a captain's package that is perhaps ever changing in terms of years of service, how does a county accomplish that?
Well, it's interesting because 89C actually sets forth a process.
The input.
There's input, and this is supposed to be done. They're supposed to establish procedures to allow input and to take a look at it periodically. So all of the other counties have put a structure in place that prevents these inversions and this unfairness and this violation of 89C3.
Is it an annual review?
It is a periodic review that occurs when the, I believe that they're supposed to have rules, and the rules in the various counties allow it to be annual, or I think it's biannual. In general, these issues come up when there is a collective bargaining agreement amendment.
Usually
or
the
change,
2 years.
And so it's every 2 years. But the other counties have dealt with that by having a structure that works. But the Big Island County of Hawaii has chosen not to have a structure that works, in fact, have a structure that is prone to violate the law. And so, you know, if it's difficult, they've made it difficult by choice. But they must go ahead and make the adjustments to make sure that the package of compensation and benefits works. With respect to the argument that no one is required to put on a hazmat suit or jump in the water to try and argue that BCs shouldn't be required to do this. Well, first of all, Battalion Chief Hayashida actually did testify that he had to jump in the water at some point. So that really is not an accurate argument, but more importantly, they're supposed to be overseeing it. You're not going to be able to oversee it if you're in the water. Similarly, the captains don't jump in the water because they're overseeing what is going on. And so they are the ones who are getting paid more because of the differential. And as I said, it is not a differential as a result of them jumping in the water. That is separate. That's 44A. It's
That's
not
the 44. 15%.
Correct. Okay. And so that is a separate issue. It's really a red herring. And finally, the idea that now it's being described as an incentive pay that should be excluded from this analysis, or a differential that should be excluded from this analysis. These are all attempts to rewrite the statute. And the county simply doesn't have that right. And if there was any question as to whether or not the legislature intended Chapter 76 or the collective bargaining agreement or the MADB interpretation to trump 89C, 89C6 says that it is this chapter that takes precedence over other laws, other legislation, other ordinances, and even interpretations of the personnel departments or the merit appeals boards. So the law is clear. You don't need to go to the legislative history, but if you do, I believe that the legislature made clear that what they intended was for the excluded to have a package of compensation and benefits that was at least equal to all of the employees that they supervised. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. We'll take the matter under advisement. Appreciate it.
Iluna, all right. Ua ho'oku'u ia mai nei ka'aha. Court is now adjourned.